Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time film festival critic, and Academy Award show critic.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that has been around almost exactly the same amount of time as the Spokane International Film Festival, since both date back to the year 1999. This year's version, which kicks off today, has shrunk a bit, running only 3 full days, culminating on Sunday, but it still offers a range of international features and shorts, live action and animated, that should interest any true movie fan. We'll discuss what you might want to catch while tickets are still available before taking a break and then returning with our reactions to last Sunday's Oscars broadcast. And, word of warning, not everything was to everyone's liking. Let's begin by looking at the movie event more commonly known as SPIFF. It was in 1999 that the late Spokane Public Radio film critic Bob Glatzer, in conjunction with the Contemporary Arts Alliance, founded what was then known as the Spokane Northwest Film Festival. Over the years, the festival evolved, growing some years, shrinking during others, but it retained its original intent to bring quality cinema to this part of the inland Northwest. And this year, though in an abbreviated form, the intent is no different. Before we get into it, I need to make a full disclosure. I used to be on the board of directors of SPIFF, and since 2010, I've been a juror. And Nathan has acted as a juror on and off over the years also. So for ethical reasons, we're just making that full disclosure. But at any rate, Nathan, why don't you begin by pointing out what you're excited to see?
Yeah, I wanted to call out a couple of Pacific Northwest related and shot films, feature films particularly, because there are also every year these really great collections of Northwest shorts. And sometimes you'll see Spokane-based filmmakers premiering their work there. But a couple features that I wanted to look at. I haven't seen either of these, so I'm excited to finally check them out. One is called Recollection, which is by the North Idaho-based filmmaker Caden Butera. And it's a sci-fi film about a future where people have their memories erased. And it plays Friday at 7 p.m. So if you're listening on Friday night, you still have time to go see this. It's at the Myrtle Wilson Performing Arts Center out at Gonzaga. And then on Saturday night at the Garland at 8:30 p.m., you can see Tim Travers and the Time Traveler's Paradox, which is by filmmaker Stimson Sneed. That played at SIFF this past summer, and I wanted to check it out there, but I wasn't able to make my schedule work out. And it's a feature adaptation of a short that itself played at an earlier Spokane International Film Festival. So you'll definitely want to check that out. Again, it's at the Garland.
Did you say it was made in Spokane?
I believe it was made in Spokane, yes. And again, Saturday, Garland, 8:30 p.m., be there. So I'm looking forward to those because I always like supporting local and regional film wherever I can at this festival.
Yeah, and as opposed to the narrative features, Mary Pat and I almost always are more interested in documentaries, and so we were able to see in advance a couple of them. Why don't you talk about the two that we did see, Mary Pat?
Well, yeah, I mean, first I need to say one thing. So Fish War, which actually is something that we saw played last week.
As opposed to Fish Wars,
right,
which is another documentary,
right,
that's out
Fish
there.
Fish War played last week at Gonzaga, and it was co-sponsored by a number of organizations. Unfortunately, they picked a screening time of 4 p.m. on March 2nd when, for film aficionados, something else was happening.
Hollywood's biggest night.
Yes, exactly. So
the Oscars is what we're talking about.
Yes, but if you get a chance to see Fish War at some point somewhere, I would urge you to do it, because maybe I liked it because it went into detail about the court cases that involved treaty rights and fishing and hunting and other game rights. But the other two that I liked, and surprisingly so, one was screening on March 9th, so Sunday at 11 a.m., titled A Good Wolf. And it's about this strip of land in the northeast corner abutting Denali National Park. The thing I liked about A Good Wolf was they do present different sides of this controversy. And it's also kind of meditative in terms of seeing the landscape in this corner of Alaska, meeting the people who live in these smaller towns but don't always agree on everything.
And yeah, that's one of the good things about the film is that a lot of these movies that take a point of view make an argument in one way or another. And this one does also. It falls down on the side of the people who are more natural-oriented, more habitat-protective. However, one of the most inspiring, charismatic characters in the entire thing is a hunter who...
And trapper.
Yeah, a hunter and trapper who he just absolutely... I am in the right here, and I obsessed with my rights to be able to do whatever I want because this is Alaska. And so, I mean, it's an interesting movie in that respect also. So what was the other one we saw, MP? This was called I Am Gitxan. I don't know how to pronounce that. It's a tribe up in the northern part of British Columbia, quite near the Yukon, actually. And it is a movie that is very much like one of the Oscar-nominated films called Sugarcane, which was also about the Indian residential schools. And this one is not in that category, but it's still quite an affecting movie.
It's basically about a teen who just graduates from high school and goes back to this area,
his tribe,
this reserve, and gets sort of in touch with his ancestral roots, meets more of his relatives and so forth.
And we hear all their stories.
Yeah. And it also gets into that whole notion of what's the difference between unceded land, unceded territories, and those that were supposedly negotiated for under various treaties. Mm. So actually, I think there are a number of films this year, short films included, that focus on the rights of Indigenous people in the Northwest. So that we don't always get to see that perspective. I mean, we know we've had various specialized film festivals in the past
and so forth.
And
we always have land acknowledgments, which is pointed out in one of the guys says, yeah, enough with your land acknowledgments. Give us the land.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually a good segue into the movies that I've seen pre-festival. So I've seen the three narrative features that are part of that particular competition. So I was one of the judges on that. And all three of them are about fractured family relationships. And the first one I wanted to talk about is also about Indigenous rights and Indigenous land. It's called The Birds Who Fear Death, directed by Sanjay Patel. And it stars Adam Beach and Simon Baker, who previously appeared in an Inland Northwest classic, Smoke Signals.
That's right.
And they play brothers who their estranged father dies. And he has deferred their inheritance of several million dollars to the Canadian reservation where he was once chief and where he has sort of a mixed legacy with the people that are there. So the brothers travel back and hope to make a deal to maybe get the money back. And so that's what that film is. The other one is called Battersea, directed by TJ Sandella and John Anthony. That's another movie about siblings dealing with a parent's death. In that case, a woman returns to her childhood home in a small Ohio town. Her brother has just sold the house and they've been on the outs, but they reunite. And it's a two people talk kind of movie. But you've got very good performances from the two stars, whose names are Jesse Howland and Nancy Kimball. And then the third one, which is incidentally my favorite of the three that I saw, is called The Star I Lost, directed by Luz Orlando Brennan. And it's an Argentinian drama. And it's about an actress in her 70s played by Mirta Busnelli. Really good performance. And she makes a return to the stage for the first time in years in a play about a woman who has dementia. And as she's rehearsing the play, she begins to have memory issues herself.
Wow.
And that inspires her own grown daughter who still lives with her to try and mend their fractious relationship, which doesn't quite go the way that she plans. So there's a lot of overlapping themes in those movies, but the tones and the settings are all over the place.
So one of the things that this festival does, as in the past, it shows golden oldies, and we have one particular this year. Tell us about it, Mary Pat.
It is the 40th anniversary of Vision Quest.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so Matthew Modine already gave a presentation to students earlier today.
Madonna's not coming?
Well, she could. Maybe it's a surprise special guest.
Yep. You never know. But I think the highlight is the closing event of the festival. And Matthew Modine of Stranger Things and Zero Day will be discussing the film with the coach,
Cash Stone, former wrestling coach at Mead High School.
Right. And the discussion will be moderated by Jess Walter. So that sounds like a fun event, 6 p.m. at the Martin Woldson Theater. And I have to say that of all the film festivals I've attended across the world, Matthew Modine is one of the most gracious star attendees. You know, he's come back to Spokane on more than one occasion to celebrate Vision Quest. And even though he's got his own projects going on now, he could not be more gracious. And so I think that's something that people can look forward to. And also, please keep in mind that there are parties and other things. So there's a SPIFF Film Festival opening party that will, again, be at the Myrtle Woldson Performing Arts Theater after the opening night film.
And anything you want to know about the festival, you can go on SpokaneFilmFestival.org. It's there online, ticket information, everything. So at any rate, that was our preview of this weekend Spokane International Film Festival. You're listening to Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to share our reactions to last Sunday's Academy Awards broadcast. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I previewed the 2025 Spokane International Film Festival, which begins its three-day run today and runs through Sunday. Let's now talk about what occurred last Sunday when, in its annual orgy of self-congratulation, the Motion Picture Academy offered up some surprises, some laughs, a little political commentary, and at least a couple of moments that resulted in a universal shoulder shrug. MP, why don't you begin this time?
Well, I had my comments about the award show divided into three different categories, which basically highlights, lowlights, and meh, okay. And I thought that the opening with Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande was great. They reprised their songs from Wicked. Isabella Rossellini's Blue Velvet Dress as a shout out to David Lynch, yeah, who she actually dated for a few years. I thought there were some other outfits that were notable, especially on the men's side. So I'd say Coleman Domingo, Timothée Chalamet, Jeremy Strong, Andrew Garfield, not just the tuxedo thing that we've seen in the past. Sean Baker's speeches for his multiple wins were particularly endearing and important. I thought that Zoe Saldana and Kieran Culkin gave good speeches as well. We talked about this on our movie preview show. The notion of best documentary, would it go to No Other Land, which I think we all agreed was the best documentary, even though it doesn't have a U.S. distributor. So yes, it won. That was great. And then I really liked Flo and the guys from Latvia who received their award.
We're genuinely happy, ecstatic, yeah, that they won.
And I would say most of the non-winners, I'm not going to say losers, seem to be pretty gracious. The big surprise of the night, I thought, was Mick Jagger. The only bigger surprise would have been if Bob Dylan showed up to give that particular
wow
award. The lowlights, Nathan, you said I couldn't talk about the fact that it was too long. We just have to make our peace with that.
I'm just tired of that being a complaint about the Oscars. It happens once a year. It's going to run on long. I mean, I think you can say, like, this one felt particularly endless, but it's a long show. Let it be long.
It's fine being long, but some of the things did not belong there.
Oh, I agree with
well,
that.
Well, right.
Yes.
The James Bond segment. I mean, yeah, we've talked about the fact that that was just, you know, that was a money grab, I think,
yes,
because obviously we're going to see some transition to Amazon. And I think that was a shout out there. The In Memoriam, it's not clear to me who qualifies. So if you're an actor, but you're primarily a TV actor, for example, do not warrant being included in that. I thought the worst moment of the night, and Dan can verify this, was Adrian Brody's speech. And I couldn't figure out whether his speech was the worst part of it or the gum toss to Georgina Chapman,
his wife,
you know, his partner. Now,
his
she's
partner,
probably
sorry,
experienced a lot worse because she was married to Harvey Weinstein. But
yeah,
that was just really, dude, like, no, do not throw your gum at your sweetie. And his speech was just all over the place. And I thought it was arrogant and ridiculous. Supposedly, it was the longest speech ever at 5 minutes and 40 seconds. So read the room, dude, and get off the stage. The things that I thought were okay... Conan was good, but I wanted him to be funnier and a little bit more satirical. There weren't any real surprises except maybe Mikey Madison, and that was a good surprise, I think, even though I did feel for Demi Moore. And I thought the silly stuff with Ben Stiller and Adam Sandler was fine. It wasn't fabulous, but it was fine.
Well, I'll start with Conan O'Brien, who, of course, was the host of the evening, and I said in our preview that I was excited for what he did. And I thought he was hilarious. There were some genuine big laughs from me. And this is what I love about Conan is that he is a master of self-deprecation. He made as many jokes about himself as he did about the people in the audience. And what I like about that is it instantly puts everyone at ease. It puts the audience in the room at ease, and it puts us at home at ease. Maybe you want them to go for the jugular a little bit
like
more.
Ricky Gervais would.
Yeah, but I think that's, I just don't think Conan does that kind of comedy. He does goofy one-liner based
comedy.
And
I do like some of them are almost throwaway lines, and those were some of the best.
And of course, I love him going back to the late night days, and he is one of the best joke deliverers of bad jokes in particular. Mm-hmm. When he has a joke that bombs, he can still salvage it and make it funny because of how bad the joke went down in the room. And I thought he did a masterful job of that opening monologue. There are some genuinely funny laughs.
I was most impressed by was how relaxed he seemed.
Yes.
I mean, billions of people are watching this. And, you know, this is probably the pinnacle of his career, to be honest. And he was fine.
He threw into sharp relief how weak of a host I've come to find Jimmy Kimmel. Like, I think Jimmy Kimmel's okay, but I think he just kind of like coasts through his monologue jokes and doesn't really let them land in the way that Conan does. He's got that old school, almost like vaudevillian style delivery. And he's smart, but honestly, he's a Harvard guy.
I've gotten used to, and I gravitate more toward the Nikki Glaser.
Well,
approach.
I thought she was a great host for the Golden Globes,
and
too.
She'll be back.
So I also wanted to talk about the James Bond tribute because it stuck out like a sore thumb. It went on forever. The performances themselves were fine, but it was like, what are we doing here?
It's like, why?
And it's just because of this acquisition from a tech conglomerate. But I looked it up. They did a Bond tribute in 2013. A giant 50th anniversary tribute to Bond. I believe that was also, if not that year, it was the year after that Adele won for Skyfall, Best Original Song.
So this is the 62nd anniversary tribute?
Yeah. And I've seen people online describe it as almost like a wake for the Bond franchise, because it's like, well, now that Amazon owns it, what's going to happen to it?
Didn't people think, if you're going to do this, then tell us who's going to be the next Bond?
Exactly.
That would have been amazing.
Right, but they didn't do that. And so I just thought that was bizarre. And I will say, I agree with you. I have been a proponent of letting acceptance speeches run on, because that's usually where the most surprising and memorable moments of the night happen. It's the unscripted stuff that we're not expecting. I would make an exception for Adrian Brody, however, because I agree it was so self-serving, and it was all of these platitudes about how lucky we are to be actors and how magical it is. And then he said some nice things about his parents, and then also had all of these kind of generic things about, you know, in fractious times. And what I liked about a different acceptance speech, which was, you already mentioned it, Basil Adra and Yuval Abraham for No Other Land. They didn't just go out there and give basic sentiments. They were clear. They were concise. They talked about the exact issue that their film was about. And I thought that was a really moving and lovely political
speech. I mean, I think Adrian Brody really missed an opportunity, if he were inclined to take it, to talk about the plight of refugees and immigrants.
He talked a little bit about it, but it was after he talked for 3 minutes about himself and his own craft. And so it just kind of felt like, you know,
gratuitous.
And I get it. You're up there, and he's won before, and he made the orchestra shut off, which can be charming and funny at times, but it just, I agree. Read the room.
But you're right. You're absolutely right. Kieran Culkin did almost the same thing, but he made it funny.
Yes.
And
yes.
His references to his wife and having more children.
Yeah, which he did at the Emmys as well.
I mean, it was funny. So were there any real surprises besides Mikey Madison?
I think Mikey Madison winning Best Actress was the most surprising. I thought it was a very pleasant surprise because it was my favorite performance of the five. I understand the narrative of Demi Moore lost, Mikey Madison won. People have been making parallels to the plot of The Substance. And
yes.
I think that's unfair to both actors. I think the idea that this was Demi Moore's only chance at an Oscar is just a rude thing to say, because she could have a lot more chances after this movie, especially. And the idea that it wasn't Mikey Madison's time, I think that's BS. I think the best performance is the best performance, and it was not an undeserved win at all. I thought it was a terrific win. And if Demi Moore had won, that would have been great, too.
It was a really strong category,
at least in terms of some of the performances.
Right.
There.
And I think that we haven't talked about the Emilia Perez circumstance, because it received the most nominations and really walked away with very little. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to watch the trajectory.
Yeah, the narratives play out.
Right.
In fact,
yeah.
it only got two, right?
Yeah.
So Zoe Saldana and Best Song.
And, yeah, right? And it actually got one more than I expected it to, because I thought Zoe Saldana would win and that would be it. But then it won Best Original Song, which is also stupid, I think. But I thought
that should have gone to Wicked, to tell you the truth.
It should have gone to, I don't know. I thought it was also kind of a weak category this year anyway. And to make up for the fact that they didn't have anybody performing any of the original songs, they had the big Wicked medley at the beginning, and they had some other musical moments, including the Bond tribute. But yeah, I thought the original song category was pretty weak.
I have to say, I was a little surprised that Anora won for Best Picture. Not that it isn't deserving, but there are going to be a lot of people who are going to watch that movie and go, this was the best that Hollywood
and
can
I think Conan O'Brien or someone said it had 479 F-words in it, and it does. And so I think that would be a turnoff for some people. So when people ask me about the film, you know, I say, hey, just be forewarned.
You say, watch it with your kids.
Yeah, I said, watch it with your small children.
And what I would say is, forget Anora. Go back and watch The Florida Project, because that is Sean Baker's best film.
Well, and I want to say that what I like about a movie like Anora, or even Parasite, or Everything Everywhere All at Once, these movies that have been winning Best Picture lately have been challenging our conception of what a quote-unquote Oscar movie is. We talk all the time about the Academy loves to vote for these kinds of movies. The Academy loves to go for this. And
that's changing.
It's changing. And I think that's exciting. Well, and that a scrappy outsider like Sean Baker could win the most Oscars for a single movie in the history of the Academy, I think is really cool.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, maybe Wicked was this year's Barbie. I don't know. I mean, sometimes movies that people enjoy don't always get nominations or win.
Yeah.
But I would tell people to go see Nickel Boys or watch Nickel Boys.
Yes,
that was
absolutely
one of my favorites of the year that didn't really get a lot of recognition.
Anyway, that was our reaction to last Sunday's Academy Awards broadcast, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I previewed the 2025 Spokane International Film Festival, which begins its 3-day run today. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot, on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the late novelist Barbara Cartland about the power of Hollywood-inspired cinema. We didn't need sex. We had Tyrone Power. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.